Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. We are giving this series a Dhamma talk under the main heading of how to deepen our mindfulness and insight practice. And we have gone through a series of instruction what to do. And in the last Dhamma talk, the heading is, when one practices with an objective of eliminating all form of physical and mental suffering, one has to practice with the determination of not even having any regards to your life or to your limb. Of course, that is if your objective is to escape from all form of physical and mental suffering. But everybody goes at their own speed with their own objective or the level where they want to be. So adjust accordingly. And once one has practiced with a full determination of giving no regard to a life or a limb, why is one doing that? We are doing that to overwhelm all form of suffering. The key word is suffering. Suffering can be understood in many ways, but from the Buddhist perspective, first and foremost, an aspect that we all understand, having difficulty in our lives whenever situation changes health-wise, prosperity-wise, fame, fortune-wise, whatever we are attempting to succeed, failure-wise, whenever we come into these sets of conditions, we suffer. We have both physical and mental pain. This is obvious one that everyone understands. But the funny thing is, only when we come to these kind of states, obvious state of suffering, we think we are in this difficult, okay, to get out of this difficult hole of suffering. Other than that, we think it's great, fantastic. This kind of suffering is called dukkha, dukkha, obvious kind of suffering. But from the Buddhist point of view, even to get out of that kind of suffering, okay, for good, one has to escape all form of physical and mental sufferings of any level and any stages. Another one is, in our life, we always live every day. Just reflect upon it. There are moments we are happy. Okay? There are moments we are happy. Whenever things come along the way we want it, or peaceful situation, or whatever that is in accordance with the way you want, we are happy. Pick up one happy moment In fact, pick up one happy moment that you really think is great and reflect upon it. How long does it last? You're happy because of that, a sudden success or whatever their wish come through. You're happy, excited, joyful. How long does it last? Not too much, not too long. Another situation or incident come in and you move into that and that happiness arises and gone. And then there are times, difficult times come in. Things don't go along the way you want it. Struggle, depressed, angry, and so on. Then unhappy moments, unpleasant moments set in. And these kind of unhappy moments, depressive moments, difficult moments sets in. Reflect upon it. Pick up one. Even the least level of that kind of state, not the greatest. And how long does it last? It lasts a lot longer. A lot longer. It arises, it disappears, it arises, it disappears. But regardless, sometimes it takes days, sometimes it takes weeks, sometimes it takes months or years. You are in that state of depression. Look at that. The happy moments and unhappy moments. The duration they arise, happy moments are quite short and fleeting. Unhappy moments are a lot longer. But we muggle through, we toughen it out. And with the hope of that happy moments to come, we keep trotting on. So in other words, the time balance between the happy moments and unhappy moments are not really in balance. But we ignore, we suppressed, we blocked with the hope of the happy moments or pleasant moments. So in here, these happiness to unhappiness, success to failure, okay, lucky to unlucky, could change on a dime. Suddenly you're happy because you got a promotion, you're celebrating with all your friends and stuff, a party. And then you got a phone call, you got an email. Okay, your parents passed away. As soon as that news come in, that happy moment, pleasant moment that you're experiencing is shifted into a total state of grief and sorrow on a dime. Instantly it changes. And that kind of changes happen so many times in your life. Changes from the moments of happiness to unhappiness. Totally uncontrollable. The change in the state of your life happens all the time. It can shift in a fraction of a second. And also, as we said, unhappy moments, depressed moments are a lot longer than the happy moments. And that is another kind of suffering. Change in situation, change in condition, change in mental state. Viparinama dukkha, second type of dukkha, suffering. The first one is obvious. This one is changes in the mood or mode of mind. Even in one day, even in an hour, if you really be careful and mindful, you know how many times it shifts. That is also suffering. And the third one is, okay, all physical and mental phenomena, which we define as self, me, I, they are always in a state of change. They are always under the oppression of state of flux and state of change, impermanence. That kinds of oppression of the state of change, impermanence, or nicca, that is the main dukkha. That is the main dukkha. And that one is very difficult to see. Okay, very difficult to see. And when we are practicing with that objective of to overwhelm and overcome all these kind of physical and mental suffering. That is our objective. And of course, if we keep contemplating, reflecting, thinking about everything under the sun, okay, we have no direction, no focus. We won't be able to identify a path. So what we do, of course, taught by the Buddha, we set up a system to observe this body and mind. Okay, this body and mind. And specifically, the one we are practicing is called vipassana. Even in vipassana, we practice pure vipassana. Pure vipassana. Which is using full foundation of mindfulness as the key tool to experience the true nature of mind and matter. That's what we are practicing. Pure vipassana. It doesn't mixed or diluted with samatha, which is a concentration meditation or tranquility meditation. So we are practicing this pure vipassana, or we can call it mindfulness insight meditation. And this is the main purpose, is to overcome all form of physical and mental suffering. But what we do was we take this specific instruction and method and we utilized it. And we don't try to weave around every kind of suffering that we can think of. We really narrow down to this body, which is about 5 feet, 6 feet, 7 feet tall. And that is the extent of this body, the form that we have. And we focus within that form. Okay? Within that form, within that body. Or we can call it matter. And as we all know, this is the combination of mind and matter, or combination of mental phenomenons and physical phenomena. Okay. Mental phenomenon and physical phenomena. You focus only into it. Because if we go all out, you won't have a proper channel to focus and understand. So we use this 6 foot long body as the main object to focus upon, and we use full foundation of mindfulness and observe. And when we observe, the main thing is to eliminate, uproot physical and mental suffering. So the key word is suffering. Okay. Suffering is not a very efficient word in translation. The original word is called dukkha. So let's use the word dukkha. Okay. I have already defined at the beginning 3 types of dukkha, and all are covered under that. And if we say suffering, all those 3 are under that word, suffering. If you can understand and perceive that way, you will have a deeper understanding, not simply the dictionary meaning of suffering. So we focus on this body with an objective of to eliminate all form of suffering. And as we said, the key word is suffering, dukkha. So that is why when we have decided, okay, to practice this mindfulness insight meditation with no regard for life or a limb, is to overcome that suffering. But as we are focusing only on this body within that confine, and also we are putting the frame of this within the framework of this meditation, mindfulness insight. Okay. That is a focus. So within that framework, within that domain, any suffering or any unpleasantness or any pain and grief that arises within that domain, that's what we are looking at. Don't have to look at the whole universe. Within this body and mind, within that framework, you are looking, you are observing. For what? To eliminate the suffering. So whatever suffering that may arise from this mind and body, physical and mental phenomenon, while you are observing, that must be overcome. That must be overwhelmed. So to tackle the main dukkha, you have to understand that dukkha through a piece of the sample which represent that dukkha within this confine of this mind and body. So when you meditate, there will be physical pain and mental pain will be arising due to your practice, directly related to your practice. And that you must overwhelm or overcome. And in the process of overcoming and overwhelming, if you have to die, so be it. If you are going to lose a limb, so be it. That's the determination. Okay. That is how the two is connected. The last talk and this talk. Or the last set of instruction and this set of instruction. One observed all physical and mental pain that are arising within the confine of this body and this observation, the mind at the present moment. Whatever they are, we observe in such a way to overcome it and to overwhelm it. So that is the factor we are applying. So when we are applying that, now you have to understand deeper into this, what kind of suffering that we are overwhelming or overcoming with this confine of mind and body. Okay. To know that, you must know, so to speak, the roadmap that you'll be traversing while you are practicing. What are you practicing? You are practicing pure vipassana, satipatthana vipassana, or mindfulness insight meditation. And if you follow that instruction precisely and correctly, you will traverse through a certain set of terrain that have a very specific characteristics of its own. Whenever you go through that terrain, and whenever you discover or uncover or come face to face with a certain characteristics of each terrain, that is called insight. You have an insight of that little domain of the mind and matter, that little segment of the mind and matter, and you begin to understand the true nature of the mind and matter within that domain, small domain, that you are traversing at the present moment, experientially, not theoretically, not thinking, not reflecting. Direct, intuitive, experiential understanding, which we call it wisdom or piña. So they have quite a few little domains you have to go pass through when you are practicing this. In all, we can say there are 13 different terrains or 13 different domains that we need to pass through. And when we pass through that, the key figure comes in. You know, whenever you are traveling, there are some flat-lying, nice roads. Sometimes it is not undulated. Sometimes it is a four-wheel drive road. Sometimes it's a very difficult road. And so on, when you are traveling. Just like that, when you are traveling or when you're on the journey, traversing these terrains of mind and matter, some are good, some are bad, some are bumpy, some are nasty, some are very great. But regardless, let's go back to the key point. The key point is suffering, dukkha, unpleasantness. And in this terrain too, there are certain terrains really nasty and unpleasant. So nasty and unpleasant, if you don't know what you should be expecting, or if you don't have a proper guide, you can go through the maze and you will never come out. Okay, you'll be still going round and round and you will never get to your destination. So there are certain terrains that are specifically identified for suffering. And that one should know at least ahead of time. So that if you are not with the group, if you are not with the teacher, if you are doing on your own especially, at least you have some sort of a roadmap. If you have a close connection with the teacher can guide you through. But regardless, we should have some information about it. Suffering, dukkha, unpleasant situation, depressive situation, depressed situation so bad you want to give up, you want to pack your bag and go home. That need to be understood thoroughly if you want to overwhelm this dukkha suffering on your practice. So to understand that, one need to know all the terrains. And as we said, there are 13 different terrains. Of course, more detail, some will make it into 16 and so on. But 13 will be sufficient. Okay. If you know the maps and characteristics and nature of each terrain, it will be quite helpful on your journey. But there's one thing you have to be very careful about knowing these terrains ahead of the practice. In theory, the danger of knowing it ahead is sometimes you think about it so much, you focus on it so much, you begin to think, you begin to imagine that you are there. This is what it is. Because you know in theory, and everything you are actually experiencing in your practice, you like to pull that in and try to put together, oh, I am here, I am there, I am on the top of the mountain, and so on. That is the danger. That is the drawback of knowing all these things ahead of time. But in here, okay, in the West especially, you don't have much opportunity to be with the teachers all the time. Some people are like to practice on their own. So it would be helpful. So the way to keep it is know these kind of information ahead of time. But once you know it, okay, keep it on the back burner. Don't focus on it anymore. Don't think about it anymore. Don't reflect on it anymore. But keep on practicing, and whenever you are coming into a, so to speak, a roadblock at that time, pull that pot from the back burner, put it on the front, and utilize it. If you can use that way, it will be very useful for you. If you cannot use that way, and if you want to keep this information in the forefront and utilize it, you will find yourself in a jeopardy. You will never overcome the stages that you are supposed to. Or worse than that, you might even imagine you have already overcome these things. So keep that in mind. That is very important. Know and have the information. Don't put it on the forefront. Utilize it only when you are in a roadblock and see what is happening. That is a very important thing to remember when one is going to have these information ahead of time. So in here, first and foremost, we practice. Okay. When we practice, okay, especially all of us here practice, so to speak, Mahasi tradition. We use full foundation of mindfulness as a tool for vipassana. Specifically in on operation level, we focus the rising and falling movement of the abdomen. Okay, rising and falling, rising and falling. That's the object we are observing, okay, this particular tradition. And even though it is the rising and falling movement of the abdomen, but actually if you think about it, it is the breath. You breathe in and you breathe out. Okay. People focus on in-breath, out-breath. Fine, that's very easy. But when you breathe in, your stomach or abdomen or belly expand. When you breathe out, your stomach or abdomen or the belly contract, expansion and contraction movement. So basically, it is the air that you are observing, so to speak. One is you focus on the nostril, and this one is you focus the movement of the air at the abdomen. Only location is different, exactly the same. This movement will be there all the time, just like the breath will be all the time as long as a person is alive. It is there all the time. So keep that in mind and don't get confused. Why are we observing at the stomach? See? The stomachs give you a larger area, so it's easier to focus. Even by the people who had never meditated before, they can come in, you can see that quite easily. Okay. Larger area, the movement is there. And also, all the Dharma talk and explanation and process with the scriptures are explain based on this rising movement and falling movement. So if you are going to follow this tradition, all explanation will be based on that events, those events. And if you are not doing that, the explanation and your experience will be quite different. So that is one thing. So here, we are observing this movement, rising movement and falling movement. So when we observe this rising movement and falling movement, okay, it's rising. And we are supposed to know that it is rising and there's a falling. And we are supposed to know that it is falling. Rising, falling, rising, falling. Let's say you are a beginner. You just started it. Rising movement, falling movement, you know. At that moment, what happened is, first and foremost, what do you really know when you're observing? Your abdomen or your stomach is expanding. My tummy is expanding. You can feel, you can sense the shape and the form of your tummy or abdomen. You can feel, you can sense the shape and the form of the tummy and it expands. Okay? My tummy is expanding. My tummy is contracting. My tummy is expanding. My tummy is contracting. And I know it is expanding and I know it is contracting. That is the beginning. That's how we started. And when you started it, if you really look at it, everything is based around I or my. My stomach, my abdomen, I know. I know my tummy is moving. Everything is based on the I. I seems to be the operator. I seems to be the knower. It is my tummy is moving. Everything is. So both this knowing as well as the contraction and expansion of this abdomen is all in one. They are one in it. And that one is based on the I. There's no separation. This movement is I, this tummy is mine, this knowing is I know. Everything is in that way. The whole thing you're observing and everything falls under an I or a self. This body is me, my I self. This knowing is me, my I self. That's how one observe and one know. Rising and falling and also touching, the same sense. I am touching, I know that I am touching. And so on and so forth. So, first and foremost, we are investigating about the nature of self. About the nature of I, if you want to eliminate all form of suffering. Okay? And in here, theoretically we know, it is, there's the body and there's the mind and body. There's a physical phenomenon and there's a mental phenomenon. But when you start observing, those are all like one unit, one entity, okay, all under the umbrella of I and mine. That's how you know. At the beginning, that's how you know. So you have to keep on observing, rising, falling, okay. You observe in such a way, it has to be quite precise. It's concurrent. Knowing. But if you keep on doing that, if you keep on observing that slowly and slowly, okay, if you don't give up, slowly and slowly, it starts changing. And why is it? The reason is, if you can have your mind focus attention on that rising and falling movement continuously for quite some time. That means your concentration built up. As soon as the concentration built up, the way you see that process of rising and falling starting to change, starting to shift, your understanding shift. What it is starting to see there's a movement. Okay. There's a movement going on. Rising movement, falling movement, rising movement, falling movement. And that is a physical phenomenon. And then there's a knowing of that movement. There's a knowing of this movement. You start to feel that rising and falling movement is one process and knowing is another process. Starting to have that separation. Why do you have that kind of a sense of feeling or understanding? Because your concentration due to continuous mindfulness has been starting to build up. When the concentration builds up, automatically you have the clarity of understanding and seeing and sensing. You begin to see two processes. One process is the movement, rising movement, falling movement. Another process is knowing of the movement. Before, it was just symbol under I. Now, that I split into two processes. One is the physical process, one is the mental process, starting to shift. That kind of shifting starting to come, and you keep meditating. You observe it as much as you can. We go through the stages at the beginning. Okay? What are these stages? You have to observe in such a way that there is no break, no gap in your observation. When you see that this split between the two processes become evident, that's one. Okay, and also other things that are still happening at that time, you're observing these rising movement, falling movement. And we all know we cannot keep our mind all the time there. So what happened is the mind wanders away. It drifted away. Thinking process come in. The mind wanders, drift, thinking, planning, remembering, imagining, all these thoughts come in. You are still observing these thoughts come in. At first it seems like it's pretty good. And then suddenly you found out a lot of thoughts are bombarding at you. A lot of thoughts are bombarding at you. When these thoughts are bombarding at you, you will have a confusion. What confusion? Oh, before I can meditate, I can focus quite well. Now I can't focus. Maybe am I doing something wrong? What is happening? That kind of question or doubt can arise in you. But understand this way. Before meditation, you think you are very centered. You're good. You can concentrate. You can do anything you want. Nothing is really disturbing you. That's how you think. And when you start meditating, your concentration is quite good. You can see rising and falling. And suddenly, the thoughts come in, the thoughts come in, the thoughts come in even more frequently. And you think that something must be wrong. But in actuality, that's not correct. Your understanding is not correct. The reason is you are starting to get into a condition, you're facing your own thoughts. Before, you never face your thoughts and you just live the way it is all the time. Now, with the concentration, with the observation of the body, the rising and falling movement. Along with that, these thoughts come in. And when these thoughts come in, now you become more aware of their intrusion. Before, there's always intruding at you, but you are not aware of it. You think that is the way it is, the way it should be. But now, because of the certain degree of concentration, you become more aware of the thoughts. As you become more aware of the thoughts, you think, something must be wrong, I can't concentrate. But in actuality, because of the certain level of concentration, you become more aware of the intrusions of the thoughts. In other words, it's a progress. You begin to understand face to face that unruly nature of the mind, unruly nature of the thoughts. Before, it's everything is perfect under order. Now suddenly you find out, no, it is not. It is these thoughts, these minds, these thinking processes are totally unruly because of your concentration. They come more and more. And in fact, you have uncovered a little aspect of the true aspect of the mind, unruly nature. That's a progress, but if you don't see that way, you understood that something must be wrong with my meditation. No, it is not. And these thoughts will come more and more and more at first. And then they will even peak really crazy. And then you'll find them slowly and slowly, they become lesser and lesser and lesser. Because you have start to have a control of the observing the all the thoughts that are coming in. You can check them, you can check them, you can check them out faster and faster and faster. When you are checking, able to check them out faster and faster and faster, they do not have a condition or situation to arise quite frequently. That's what happened. So that's a shift you will see in there. At the same time, while you're observing, you will also understand the or uncover the unruly nature of the mind. And if you understand how it's supposed to be and what is happening, you will be keep on doing it, observing, because the thoughts itself is the meditation object. And only if you observe the thoughts, you will understand the nature of the thought. If you don't observe the thought, you would not understand the nature of the thought. First and foremost, you already understood. This is unruly. And you're observing again. While you're observing, first of all, it's simply rising and falling and rising and falling. Okay. Mind and body all mixed up. And here, suddenly, with repeated and persistent observation, two process splits, physical phenomenon and mental phenomenon. You started to experience that. And then, what do? You keep on observing, but you observe in such a way so that you can see and you can feel or you can sense the beginning of the rising movement and the end of the rising movement. The beginning of the falling movement, the end of the falling movement. If you remember, one of the instruction is to observe in such a way, keeping to know the cessation of the physical and mental phenomenon. That's one of the instruction. So that's what is happening. You observe in such a way so that you know the beginning and the end. How do you observe? You observe deeply. You deep observe closely, you observe penetratively. When you observe this rising and falling movement closely, deeply and penetratively, you will start seeing the, so to speak, the beginning of the rising and the end of the rising, beginning of the falling and the end of the falling. Of course, in your mind, in your experience, you are seeing this beginning and the end, beginning and the end, beginning and the end. But in reality, okay, if you traverse all the terrains, you will find out you are simply knowing the middle of the movement. You don't truly see the beginning of the movement. You don't truly see the end of the movement. The middle part of the movement is the most distinct and most obvious that what you are. But regardless, as you are inclining your mind to the cessation, you begin to see and feel that way. So, observing deeply, closely, and penetratively means you begin to feel and see these movements with more qualities and more characteristics. First of all is the, so to speak, the beginning and the end. And along with it, not only the movement, you will see the other qualities, which is, along with the movement, there's a pressure, there's a stiffness, there's a tension, there's a feeling of slight unpleasantness at a certain point. All these things will become more and more and more obvious. Will become more obvious. Before, you are observing what you know is rising and falling. Now, not only the rising and falling movement, you begin to see other qualities and other aspects of it. Tension, pressure, fullness, bloatedness, slight discomfort, stiffness, and so on. And also on the falling movement, hollowness, easiness, relax, these kind of things, you'll be covering not only the movement, and also even the movement. What happened is, before rising movement, there's only one rising from the beginning to the end. And when you are observing deeply and closely, this one rising movement is not really only one rising movement. It is a composite of successive small little movements. A series of small movements consists of this one movement. You began to experience these little small movements, stages of movements. Or some people talk this broken movement. Some people say it that way. These come to be. That is what you began to experience when you go deep and penetrative. And at the same time, that understanding of this is the physical process, this is the mental process become more and more obvious. In the physical process, the little broken movements are there, and these tensions and pressure are there, and they are happening on its own, and there is the mind that knows it. There is a knowing process going on, mental phenomenon going on. That is also happening. Those two are happening at the same time, but they are separate. These are happening. That is the progression of your observation. And then what happens is when you're observing that, okay, one should be aware. Okay, you are practicing pure vipassana. If you're practicing pure vipassana, you should know what your true objects are. Okay? There are, you can divide it in general, two kinds of objects. One is the conceptual object. Pinyati, conceptual object, under the names. And another one is the ultimate reality, or Paramattha, okay? Or as it really is, or you can say it, the true nature, or nature. All these things. One is a concept, one is nature, the true nature. There are two types of object. And all conceptual objects are object for samatha meditation, concentration meditations. And all these ultimate realities or the true nature, paramattha, are the true objects of vipassana. One should clearly understand that. And if you understand that, now, what can you do? When you practice and when you're observing, everything comes and you have to observe everything. Sometimes you observe what? You observe this rising movement, you can sense size and shape and form of your tummy. Okay? Size, shape, form, that's a concept. And also the nature of the move, the manner of the movement, swift movement, jagged movement, associated with the form. And then finally, it's called the nature, simply pressure, stiffness, pure movement without associating with the form. All these three, invariably, based on your emphasis, they will come to your attention. Form comes in, manners come in, also the natures come in. And at that time, if you know what is the true object of vipassana is, to observe, paramattha, the nature. So incline your mind towards the true nature. And then don't block, don't push away, don't give emphasis on the form and the concept. In other words, you streamline your mind. Streamline it towards the true nature. And if you do that, your progress will be very fast. And if you don't understand that division, you will be there for a long time. And you will be emphasizing more on the form and the manners. And as soon as you are emphasizing more on the form and the manner, what are you doing? You are practicing samatha meditation. And if you are emphasizing on the nature or the true nature, then you are practicing vipassana. See, just that little emphasis changes into totally two different directions. Don't emphasize on the form or the concept. Okay? But if they come, acknowledge it. But emphasize and focus on the true nature of the objects that are arising. And that way you will be purely in the pure vipassana and your progress will be very fast. Otherwise, you will be going in circle and circle, round and round all the time. So those are the three things that is very important. First of all, observe in such a fashion, knowing that what your true object of vipassana is. And then observe closely and penetratively and deeply. And observe repeatedly. And if you do that, slowly and slowly, you will see what you understand as I breathe, I expand my tummy, I know. This kind of understanding drops. Because these are all conceptual understanding. They drop and suddenly all the knowing is simply the movement, the pressure, the stiffness. And they are one channel, one process going on And another channel is the mind that is aware of it. Another channel, two channel going on. Those two channel doesn't cross. But at the same time, this two channel, physical phenomenon and mental phenomenon, penyati and paramatta, concept and ultimate reality, they coexist even though they are separate. Both this concept and this ultimate reality coexist in this body. In our normal life, normal day, every day, we emphasize so much on the concept and the form and the shape and the size and the color. That is on the top. And the true nature, tension, pressure, hot, cold, vibration, they are buried underneath, submerged underneath. The true nature is buried and the concept is on the top. And with that concept, we relate to the world. But they are there. But when you meditate and when you observe correctly and properly, suddenly the concept starting to subside or sink. And the ultimate reality began to rise. It rise to the top. And your awareness become more of the ultimate reality, but not the concept. Concept stop. And you live with the ultimate reality. When you live with the concept, it carries on. When you live with the ultimate reality, they arise at the moment and they disappear at the moment. Your involvement is very sharp and precise. It doesn't carry on. So this is the first understanding of the true nature of the mind and matter. What you consider self or me or I or mine is actually two phenomena, two process, physical and mental phenomena. And they are entirely different. They are not mixed. But they work together. They coexist, but they are not mixed. Just like apple and orange in bowls. And if a yogi truly practices diligently and ardently in a retreat, this experience can become yours within 3 to 4 days. You don't have to wait for your whole life to experience it. You must practice diligently and correctly and precisely. And you will have this experience within 3 to 4 days. And that insight is called discriminative knowledge or insight of mind and matter. Nama rupa pariccheda jnana. That's the first insight. Okay. Today we'll start with the first insight and we will traverse through various insights in the coming lectures. But emphasis will be given on the dukkha, suffering. So may all of you be able to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation diligently, correctly, and precisely, and may you be able to uncover all the series of insights as soon as possible. Sadhu, 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 Buddham bhujemi, Dhammam bhujemi, Sangam bhujemi.